This is 63% Scottish, a Scotland appreciation podcast.
Yes, welcome to 63% Scottish. My name is Eamon O'Flynn and I'm your host. In our very first episode, we discussed the fact that you simply don't need to be Scottish or Irish or Chinese or Brazilian or whatever in order to feel a connection to a culture or society. Genetic heritage is absolutely not necessary in order to develop and sustain a fascination in a specific type of music, food, or history. Of course, this entire podcast is built upon the surprise discovery of my rather strong Scottish genetics, but in reality, you could be 0% Scottish and want to learn about Scotland. In that first episode, I was speaking to Dr. Kevin James, the Scottish Studies Foundation Chair at the University of Guelph, who noted that he began studying Scottish history long before he knew he had any Scottish heritage. In fact, he joked that when he became the Scottish Studies Foundation chair, his genetics were unknown to him, so it was a bit of a relief to find that he did have Scottish blood coursing through his veins. What's my point? Well, you can become a renowned Scottish historian without being 100% Scottish. You can become a renowned bagpiper without being 100% Scottish. You can become a whiskey connoisseur without being 100% Scottish. You can become a fluent Gaelic speaker, unlike most Scots, I might add, without being 100% Scottish. You can even become the leader of a Scottish community without being 100% Scottish. I know that the vast majority of our listeners aren't from Scotland, so I hope that resonates. You can be 5% or 22% or 98% Scottish and be as curious as I am about everything Scotland has to offer. And that leads me to my guest, John Sawyer. John is the president of the St. Andrew Society of Toronto. Founded in 1836, the society is almost definitely one of the largest such groups in North America. But John is not 100% Scottish. In fact, in our earliest correspondence, he noted that he celebrates his, and I quote here, Scottishness out of pride and preference rather than weight of DNA, which I think is a poetic and beautiful notion. I've asked John to speak with me about a few things in this episode. First, what is it that attracts him to Scottish culture? What has he found in the St. Andrews Society? Second, what does the St. Andrews Society offer to people with or without Scottish heritage in Toronto? There are St. Andrews Societies, or Scottish societies more broadly, all across Canada, the United States, Australia, and New Zealand, and my hope is that hearing a bit about them might encourage you to take your first steps toward joining your own Scottish community. Enjoy the conversation. When we first traded emails, you made it clear to me right away that you were far from 100% Scottish. So let's just clear the air for those listening at home. What sort of genetic heritage do you have?
All right. By weight of DNA, I think I come in at 27% Scottish.
Okay.
My mother was Danish. She was born in Denmark. So it's of no particular surprise that fully half of my DNA is Scandinavian. Now, where the Scandinavian and the Scottish interconnect, I don't think I can necessarily track that part.
Of course.
And the rest is rounded out with English and Irish.
Yeah, the Scandinavian really does muddy those waters a little bit because, Scotland, Ireland, north of England, there's a lot of Scandinavian blood there to begin with.
Yeah. Well, hey, I love the flag of Shetland, and if you happen to be one of those people who enjoys the television show Shetland. Of course, the flag is kind of a combination of the Norse flags, mm-hmm. with the crosses, vertical and horizontal, with a blue background.
And you know,
go figure.
And we had Cánaíoch MacLeod, the Hebridean baker, on this show quite a while ago. He was talking about this with his cookbooks, because he's been writing cookbooks, and they have sections on Norse baking, because he's he's from the Isle of Lewis, and he's like the connection to the Norse is almost as strong as it is to Scotland for a lot of people there. So that makes sense. Okay, let's I think that's a passable grade right there. It doesn't.
Well,
when
50% is already booked, 27 is not a bad chunk. But the thing is, like most multi-generational Canadians, we are often a mixture of cultures and nationalities, as in many cases, as well as races. And if we kind of reflect on our roots mm-hmm. and perhaps try to connect with our heritage, we have to happen, we have to pick a lane.
Mm-hmm.
What is it you're going to celebrate? And, as I've said to you, I chose to make the connection with the Scottish part of me.
Yeah.
Of course, this was made easier with a spouse whose Scottish roots are broad and deep. She hails from Prince Edward Island, and 40% of the population in PEI is of Scottish ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her parents was a McKay and the other was a McEwen. And her ancestors were among the first to settle the island in the 1760s. In terms of Scottish DNA, she kind of upped the family average.
Yeah. this is something you and I, right before we started recording, we're talking about Dr. Kevin James, who was the first guest here. And he's someone who has a close association with the Toronto Sanders Society. And he had talked about this a lot, about just not really necessarily caring about the genetic heritage piece, because you get to make a lot of choices in life. And as you said, we're all a combination of a lot of different things for the most part. But it also shouldn't stop you from being that you're not 100% of anything shouldn't stop you from being interested. So it's no matter what your background is, I think if you're interested in Scotland, it's an opportunity for you to learn about Scotland.
Yeah.
And that's what the Sanders Society is. So that's, so we'll get to that point though. So you mentioned this just a second ago. I spent about 3 minutes in the introduction talking about how little importance we should place on genetic heritage. So the far more interesting question is how you became enamored with Scottish culture. And so where did your love of Scotland start?
Actually, the thing that's ironic about it is it was my Danish mother.
Really?
That triggered the interest. She had been a fan of Scottish culture herself, loved bagpipes, Highland games. And would have had my brother and I and Kilsa would have expressed an interest at the time.
Really? Interesting.
She tried to get me to join a pipe man when I was young. And regrettably, I didn't jump at the chance. It's kids often,
mm-hmm.
But it was an interest that I kind of pursued and indulged for much of my life. Two things. Make that relatively easy, I think. Scotland punches way above its weight when it comes to cultural icons. I mean, from tartan to kilts, whiskey to haggis, bagpipes to Burns, and not let us forget all those Highland games that go on, certainly in this neck of the woods, all over the province.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are they're broadly exported and identified with Scotland. I mean, what country of 7 million people has that kind of cultural impact on a global basis? I mm-hmm. defy it. There's not really anybody else that does it quite as well as Scotland does. And it also makes it, as a consequence, it makes it a whole lot easier to participate
mm-hmm.
in things Scottish, because they're here. In a very tangible way. And I think the other thing is the degree to which Scots have influenced Canadian history and culture. Big influence. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't even mention the military influence. I mean, Canada's got more military and kilts than Scotland does. and you look at who's participating. Well, guess what? It's as diverse as our population.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these men and women kilted and it's become part of their heritage.
Yes.
Even if it's primarily the military part of it. I just think, I think that has made it, certainly has made it easier for me. And I think it makes it easier for anybody that finds some fascination in it. To participate, and to learn about Scottish culture and Scottish influence. God, I was reading an article today or this weekend in the Globe Mail, and they were talking about George Brown.
Yeah,
and his influence. Now, they didn't happen to mention in passing that he'd twice been president of the St. Andrews Society of Toronto. Mm-hmm. And what impact he had in that regard, looking after Scots who were recent immigrants to the city. But hey, father of Confederation, the founder of Canada's national newspaper, and a politician that went head to head with Sir John A. Macdonald. Lots of influence. Mm-hmm. But the Scots, as I said, the Scots have had such a big impact on our history and culture.
Yeah, you mentioned Sir John Macdonald there. I mean, yeah, you go back and it's almost every major is either a French something that's a historical event is either a French event or there's a couple of Scottish names at the top of the bill in Ontario for sure. So I'll tell you right now. So this is something people who've listened to this show would know that I love history, obviously, but my gateway into embracing a culture is food. And I've actually talked about this on this podcast before, about going to Iceland and being absolutely broke and feeling like I'd kind of wasted the opportunity because I couldn't afford any of the food because it's incredibly expensive. This was many years ago and thought it was a missed opportunity. But when the moment I realized that I had Scottish heritage, I started looking up what kind of whiskey I should be trying first and convinced my mother, who is very English, but genetically very Scottish, to try cooking some simple Scottish recipes with me. I'm currently drinking a Glenkinchie whiskey as we speak, because that always gets me into the mood to talk about Scotland. What is it about Scottish culture that has hooked you in? Like, is there anything that you can identify and say, I love this. This is the thing that keeps me coming back. It could be music. It could be history. It could be maybe you're a substantial whiskey connoisseur.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. 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 Is there something specific, though? Is there?
Oh, hey, look, I kind of get I understand the impact of food and food and drink. I've been a fan of Scotch for a long time, and by the way, I actually like haggis.
Yeah,
I will eat it whenever I can get it. I think probably one trigger was when my current wife bought me a formal kilt outfit, and I ended up getting married kilted. And I joined several chat rooms on kilts and Highland wear. And I joined a group that met monthly in a local pub, Kilted, just as a reason to get dressed up in Highland wear.
Just to put the kilt on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, good. They were good company, and it was and you're going to go up for a drink at a pub, doing it with a bunch of friends with a common interest. It's as good a reason as any. But I think the thing that was probably most significant was the St. Andrew's Charity Ball, and wife and I started going to it early days, and early days for us, not for the ball.
Yeah, we got quite a long time ago.
Yeah. It was, aside from anything else, it was a great opportunity to get dressed up in Highland formal wear and go out and party. And the ball had a lot of appeal. And it was, for us, it was almost like our New Year's celebration. It was close enough. Mm-hmm. But we weren't getting dressed up in formal wear and going out and celebrating New Year's. So let's do it on St. Andrew's Day.
Yeah.
And it's one of those events that, it's not just the ball. We've got dance practices as well. Mm-hmm. And we met great folks. And, you know, even if it was just the once a year when we got together for the, or the five times a year, we got together for the ball. It was a lot of fun and it was supporting a worthy cause. Mm-hmm. And it's as good as it gets. And the society has a whole lot of traditions and activities that keep us, engaged. So as I said, the Kilt and the St. Andrew Society. Were kind of the glue.
Yeah.
They were the gateways and they were the things that we kept going back to.
And so we've been talking about the St. Andrew Society, and I think now is the perfect time to kind of to ask you when and how you got involved with it. And kind of what were your first impressions as someone who is kind of just coming in contact with it?
Well, as I said, I eased into it. Mm-hmm. I had been going to the charity ball for it's probably 8-9 years before somebody finally said, "Well, why don't you just join the society?" Because surprisingly enough, a lot of the people that come to the ball don't actually belong to the society as well. And I said, "Well, okay, sure, I'll volunteer." Yeah. There's always that slippery slope, of course.
Yeah.
Because we are a volunteer organization, we don't have any paid staff. I mean, it's literally the directors and the volunteers that run the organization, put on the events, choose and deliver funding to the charitable groups that we support, and so we need help. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I had a great group of individuals, and talented and interesting, and I've enjoyed working with them. So, ended up going from volunteering and then being on the getting invited on the board, chairing a number of different activities on the board, and last year I was elected president. I'm the 93rd president, or 93rd. Yeah.
I might ask you after this. We don't have to cover this at this exact moment, but I'd love to get a brief list at some point of some of the other presidents that because I know that there are a fair number of fairly prominent people on that list.
Yes.
And you're a part of that. you're a part of that long lineage.
Well, it is, certainly, that's part of what's fascinating about being in an organization that's been around for 186 years. Mm-hmm. We're older than the country.
Yeah.
And it wasn't our first president that was involved in building the country. We've had a long influence. I mean, just belonging to anything that's been around that long is... It's fascinating. It's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, do I enjoy this? Yeah, it's the best unpaid job I've ever had.
Yeah,
but we were doing our Christmas first opportunity we had to get the family together yesterday. And sitting in our dining room is the clock. Now, it's one of the traditions of the St. Andrew Society that this clock goes from president to president.
Interesting.
And it has for over 100 years. Now, the clock itself goes back to, as far as we know, the youngest it is goes back to 1720. Because I believe the clockmaker actually died in 1720, so it was built sometime before that. Yeah. Every year, the presidents have a reception at the house for volunteers and board members and past presidents and that kind of thing. And one of the traditions is we have a piper blasting away. We have a fellow with an oil can filled with scotch. And we march past the clock three times. And each time you pass the fellow with the oil can, he tops up your scotch and you toast the clock. It's called the oiling of the clock, by the way.
I mean, you're the one who ends up well oiled. Yeah.
Hey, but there is an oil can. I swear to God, I'll show you the oil can. But this is a tradition.
Yeah.
And it's been going on for over 100 years.
That's incredible.
And it's just, you know, it's like, it's brother, it's fun being part of that continuity.
Yeah.
And continuing to celebrate that as tradition. And it's not just a Scottish thing, obviously. It's very much a Scottish-Canadian Toronto thing.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, it makes me think in some ways of, I was trying to think of like anything in my life that has that kind of lineage, that kind of, you know, I think the NHL hockey has just recently passed its centenary. You know, and so you're thinking about like that's an old institution that you get to be a part of a group of people, and it's nowhere close to it to to the organization you're leading, which to me is just incredible. That's so to be part of that is just I can't imagine what it's like to say I'm walking in the footsteps of all these other people as well.
Yeah, we do have two history books.
Really?
And you can actually access them on our website. The first one was the first 100 years, 1836 to 1936. And then we produced a second one that doesn't quite cover 100 years, of course, but it provides a more modern perspective.
Hmm.
So people can actually look it up. Of course, we welcome them to dive into our history.
Yeah, I will. Yes. I grew up in a very small town, far from any organized St. Andrew's Society. When I learned that it existed, I was a bit fascinated with the fact that it isn't just a social club. So it's not a, you know, just a group of people with some degree of Scottish heritage, but it has a social mission as well. Can you tell us a bit about that mission?
Sure. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to cheat. I'm going to sit here and read our mission statement. And it's not one of these one-line pithy mission statements because it's complicated. But to quote the mission statement, the St. Andrew Society of Toronto has been founded in 1836 by the Scottish community to provide aid to Scots immigrants. Today, it provides grants to small community charities that support those in need or transition, regardless of origin. Society respects its Scottish roots, honors its traditions, and celebrates Scottish-Canadian culture and heritage through its events, activities, and communications. Continues to build bonds between Canada and Scotland. Its membership is inclusive, welcoming, and increasingly reflects the diversity of our community. So that's our mission statement.
And that's so cleanly mirrors what we were talking about at the very, very top here of reflecting the diversity of the community as well.
Yeah. Well, as I said, practical terms, it means we have a charitable foundation in addition to the society, and it runs a program funding and providing grants to small organizations, helping to mitigate the risks of poverty. And we're in the process right now of reviewing applications that we've received for 2024, and by May we'll be handing out grants to the various charities, and it kind of goes on in the background. Our ball supports our charities. Our Burn Supper supports our charities as well. But we also have a bunch of other social activities. Scots related, thematically Scots related, that go on over the course of the year.
I was just about to ask you about some of that because I know from looking at our statistics that we have listeners all over the world, especially North America, and there are St. Andrew societies in just about every major city. I'd bet that all of these listeners, not all of these listeners, are currently members of a society. So perhaps we can entice them a little bit. So, you know, if you were in Toronto, what should you expect from the St. Andrew's Society? What kinds of things, how do you get involved?
Well, I mean, the charitable part I kind of talked about, the cultural part of it. Yeah, we do the things that so many organizations, so many Scottish organizations do. Of course, we have a burn supper. Ours is at the University Club each year, and we'd have, as I said, the ceremony at the burn statue. We've got a couple of concerts coming up over the course of February, both of which are at the Rivoli. One is dance and music, and the other is Eye on the Fife. We'll be performing at the Rivoli as well. I mean, we do support. excuse me, we do support Scottish musicians, Scottish music. Scottish Canadian music as well. Oh, we've got a curling event coming up in February, mm-hmm. Spring dinner, and last year that was actually, believe it or not, at the cooking facility of the George Brown College. Just to get the plug in there.
Yes, yeah, of course.
And there's usually, there's usually pub events in the fall as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a variety of activities, yeah. And if we can swing it, we may have some sports events thrown there, because we're also trying to help out those that are Scottish new arrivals, right back to our roots, and engage them with our organization.
Mm-hmm. That's so, anyway. A full calendar is what I think. It does sound like there's something for everyone. If you know, I've noted that your organization does a great job on social media. I think that there's a lot of you get a good feel for what it is you do by mm-hmm. checking that out. I'd highly recommend people take a look there. Some of the videos that pop up right after the ball, for instance, really give you a feel for what the experience could be if you were there.
Yeah. We talked about things Scottish. Didn't talk about the fact that the ball is actually jointly sponsored with the 48th Highlanders.
Really?
Which is again, a storied Canadian regiment, Kilton, of course. As I said, we've been doing this for as long as the ball has been around. And the consequence of that is, of course, they're very much involved in the ball itself, but participating. The Ode to the Haggis has been done for almost 20 years by the Regimental Sergeant Major of the 48th Highlanders. The pipes and drums were probably one of the few St. Andrew's balls that's all Cayley dancing. Yeah. It's all Cayley dancing to the pipes and drums of the 48th Highlanders.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, and then we also throw in the dance lessons too, just so just to help.
Yeah.
But oh, by the way, we hold those at the armory, and we include a mid break in the officers' mess. So there's some sort of cultural exchange with the regiment as well. Hmm. But again, it's that Scottish Canadian heritage.
Yeah,
and perpetuating it. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's. I think I may have mentioned this to you previously, but I grew up in Wallaceburg, and it was surrounded by there was the Selkirk Bridge, and there was the Murray Street Bridge, and there was the everything was a. It's impossible to miss the influence. I think. We only have another minute or two. Is there anything else we should talk about before we wrap up?
Well, I just probably just in passing, what do people get out of belonging to the society? Well, hey, we give them discounts on their events, advanced ticket purchases, discounts at merchants selling Scottish gifts and clothing, discount to the ROM, and they also get our monthly newsletter, Tartan Thistle. And it's got a bit of souped nuts. I mean, it's a bit of everything in there. There's you know, the Scottish phrase of the month, and there's the you know, a tartan of the month. But we've also got some you know, current newsworthy stuff, and then what's going on in society and all that kind of stuff as well. Worth a short investment in taking a look at it. Do we need members? Oh, absolutely. As I mentioned before, strictly a volunteer organization. And our members come to our functions. That's important. They donate and support our charitable activities. And they are the people that where we find volunteers necessary to run things. But here's one of the interesting benefits, I think, is if you're looking for an opportunity to wear your kilt, we'll provide you with those opportunities throughout the year.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's almost too much or too good to pass up right there. okay. So that's all the time we have. Thank you, John, for joining us today.
Yeah, I mean, Triff, it was absolutely fun. Great fun. And thank you for having me.
All right. And for anyone interested in joining a Sandra Society, we'll be including links to some of the major organizations across North America in the show description for this episode. And also, this is the very last episode of season one of 63% Scottish. I hope to come back with more episodes later in 2024 with all new topics. Until then, sláinte. That is all for this episode of 63% Scottish. Please connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just search for 63% Scottish and you'll find us. If you want to help our show keep growing, consider subscribing on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. This show is supported through promotional partnerships with the St. Andrews Society of Toronto, the Scottish Society of Ottawa, the St. Andrews Society of Los Angeles, the St. Andrews Society of Winnipeg, the Clans and Scottish Societies of Canada, the Singapore St. Andrews Society, the St. Andrews Society of the State of New York, and Chicago Scots. If you live in any of these places, I encourage you to find out how you can get involved. Links to all of these organizations are in the description for this episode. We also receive promotional support from the Scots Corner page on Facebook and the Center for Scottish Studies at the University of Guelph. This show owes a debt of gratitude to the Scottish Banner, the premier publication for Scottish people and those of Scottish heritage in Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the United States of America. You can find all of our episodes on their website, along with short articles on each subject. Again, links are in the episode description. Music in this episode is from Roman Scenic Music. Thank you for listening to 63% Scottish. Until next time, cheers and sláinte.